Cacao Swap. All right, everyone. Welcome to episode 17 of the Interracial John podcast. This is like a super duper special episode. It is spouse swap day, and I'm joined today by the lighter hued half of the Chonilla podcast. What's up, Clove?
What's going on, Leslie?
Not much. Not much at all. Excited. We're swapping here on our end of the pond, so to speak, and our better, well, other halves anyways, will be joining each other on the Chonilla podcast. It's so exciting. I'm pretty psyched to just see how we interact with each other and talk about our spouses and all that fun stuff, so it's going to be awesome.
I'm cheating.
Yeah, exactly. It's a podcast cheating. I like it.
Exciting.
Let's get this housekeeping stuff out of the way. So this is the Interracial John podcast. You can find us on iTunes or Stitcher Radio. Just search Interracial John. That's J-A-W-N. You can also find us on our website at interracialjohn.com. And of course, we are on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, Tumblr. Again, that's at Interracial John, J-A-W-N. And Clove, why don't you give us all the deets about Chonilla, of course. I'm a Chonillian, so... excited about that.
You can check out the Chonilla Facebook group. Just go to Facebook. What is it, Shirley? Facebook and / Chonilla. Is that how that works? I need your help here, Shirley.
For what, the Facebook?
Yes. Chonilla.com/forum. You can follow me on Twitter at Clovisaurus. And anything Chonilla, just go to Google and Google Chonilla, and you'll find everything you need.
That's right. And actually, I joined Google Plus just because of your Google Plus group. I mean, everybody has a Google Plus account because, you know, they make you create one and everything. Yes. I've never used it. I hadn't even put any pictures on it or anything. And I went in there and it was like all these people. They're all like talking to each other.
Yeah.
It's like, damn.
Every once in a while, a new person will join Google Plus and then they will just send out invites left and right. So you see a spike in activity.
They're like, wait. That's hilarious. Actually, I joined a few groups in there. Seems like their community piece is strong. The rest of it, not so much.
Yeah, I'm still trying to navigate my way through it, and I don't know what kind of like what they're using as their bar for intuitiveness. But so far, I found it like a little bit clumsy and cumbersome to kind of work through. But maybe it's just because I'm not familiar with it.
Right. I like their app though. Their phone app is very nice, but I will say that the desktop version is a little like weird, and it's very different from the other social networks. They definitely didn't replicate things. I think that's like the Google way or whatever. I don't know. So.
We do it our way because it's proprietary.
That's right. We own it all. We own it. So we've been unfortunately starting with updates about Ferguson. So I don't want to go too much about it. But I was curious just to know kind of how much have you heard about the situation in Ferguson and the grand jury and everything in Canada and what the media has been saying about up there and kind of what the perspective is that you've been hearing outside of the U.S.
I could be wrong, but I'm getting a slight tone in your voice that you feel like you talk about this a lot and you want to make sure that, you know, you don't overtalk it. Well, I'm telling you right now, like, you've been my source for the first so I'm just letting you know I want to be updated on Ferguson.
All right. Yeah. I have been talking about it a lot, and I talk about it on Twitter all the time. I'm talking about it on Facebook, and it is I started this Tumblr, the Ferguson National Response Network, to kind of have a house for all of the different activities going on around the country, and one in Canada. Toronto's having one, so it's exciting. There are lone international response event, and I put the Canadian flag up there for them and everything. It's exciting. Okay. I had to decide. I was like, should I put a maple leaf? I was like, no, I'm going to do the flag, the whole flag. So I started the Tumblr like 2 weeks ago, and I really actually was on a conference call with a bunch of local clergy in St. Louis, and they had expressed to me that they really have so much going on there. They've been doing hours of de-escalation training with all of the protesters and preparing for, you know, just whatever the outcome may be, that they'll be able to peacefully protest and handle themselves and know what they want to do. And I'm talking hours of training, all the stuff they're working on. They really haven't had any bandwidth for any national agenda, and nobody else was really doing it. And I was like, well, I can just start one and we'll see. I had, by that time, I had already talked to maybe six cities, just knowing people, because we had done this National Moment of Silence event in August with about 100 and something cities. And I had done the one here. I had organized the one here in Philly. So I had some contact with a few organizers. So I contacted like Chicago, Atlanta, New York, obviously here in Philly, LA, Oakland. And I was like, hey, you guys doing anything? And I was like, let's just put them up and I'll put a form up and we'll see kind of what happens. So it's been 2 weeks. We have 116 cities up there now, 37 states, which is great. It's been a really good response. But the funniest thing of it is that one news person has contacted me from Bloomberg to ask me about it, kind of how it came to be, what it is. But if you Google the term Ferguson National Response Network, you'll see maybe 50 articles that reference it. They reference it as a coalition, a group calling itself, a group. It's got, they like actually reference it, and it's like, it's not a group, it's a Google form, a Tumblr page, and me. There's nobody there, and it's like, this is the state of journalism in this country. They don't even have any, they are referencing an organization they know nothing about. Yeah, zero.
It's a depot of information.
That's it. Like, and once one of them puts that phrase up, like, oh, a group calling itself, whatever, that's it. They just, it's like a cycle. Rinse, repeat, da 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 da. And I told the guy from Bloomberg, I said, hey, you're the first person to contact me. He's like, you're kidding. I'm like, no, I'm not fucking kidding. And it's kind of ridiculous. It's embarrassing.
They're probably not used to people doing things on the internet as a selfless act.
Right.
Like, you're selflessly giving people who want to hear about it, but they're always used to people saying, like, well, I'm the person taking credit for it.
It's crazy to me. And it's like, I actually don't want the credit, but it's just this idea that they're referencing something that they, I mean, anybody could be behind it. It could be like the Klan. Like, I'm just saying, like, they literally have no idea. This could all be a setup to like harm people in 117 cities. And they're out there like promoting it, putting a link to it and everything with no idea what it is. It's kind of fucking crazy. It's just nuts to me. It's just nuts.
All that information is definitely appreciated.
Well, thank you very much.
I wanted to know, I guess, because you got me caught up on the Ferguson's response thing, but I just wanted to know, like, what is going on in Ferguson at the moment?
Absolutely. So at the moment, we are still waiting for the grand jury to come back. And it's this really precarious situation where, from my perspective anyway, the government, the local government and the police are sort of playing a cat and mouse game with the people of Ferguson and the greater St. Louis area. So the governor declared a state of emergency last week. Literally a state of emergency, which is reserved for like blizzards, weather emergencies, huge acts of God, really, is what we reserve this type of stuff for ahead of the announcement. So his assumption is that these black people getting together is a state of emergency in the state of Missouri, apparently. And the thing about that is once that becomes declared, a lot of things go into place legally that suspend people's civil rights within the state. It's basically martial law, not as far as true martial law, which would be a federal level, but on the state level, it is what martial law is on a state level. So they can arrest people for things that previously they wouldn't have been able to arrest them for. They can suspend people's civil rights under this act that is a state of emergency, and that the emergency services, which include the police, take precedence over everything. So again, this is ahead of anything even happening. So it's been 107 days today since Michael Brown was killed. These protesters have been out there every night for 107 days in the heat of the summer, in the freezing cold. It's snowing there right now. And every day they're out there working hard, being peaceful protesters, making their rights really known and being vocal about it. And there's been zero violence against any police officers. There's been no threats against them. Anybody that's been hurt has been a protester in this entire 107 days. So this idea that there's something to be afraid of, it's the most ridiculous thing.
Right.
It's crazy.
I saw some business owners were boarding up their shops, getting ready for the verdict.
Yeah, because in the press conference where Governor Jay Nixon announced the the state of emergency, he made this big show of saying that, you know, violence will not be tolerated. Right. And he's there to protect personal and private property and life. But he said that real low, the life in life, like really low, like in life, like
violence
that.
Will not be tolerated if it comes from civilians.
Correct. Thanks. Correct. We can pay you to kill us, but God forbid, right. don't you dare try and say anything about it.
Seen, I guess you're up to date on all the work that Anonymous is doing with the Klan in Ferguson.
The Klan in Ferguson, which is totally not surprising at all. And I think it's interesting because Missouri is one of those states that people would assume is a northern, I'll put quotes around that, northern state. But really it's not in its history. It's a southern state for sure. And so I think that's been a little eye-opening. The thing about here, though, is that white people are so fucking oblivious. It's like... And every time I see one of them, like, wake up, it's like they've been asleep for, like, their entire lives. Oh, and
it is like waking up from the Matrix. I can vouch for that.
It's crazy. And it's so interesting to me. This happened to Drew. I've been working on these issues here in our local state, dealing with mass incarceration. I've been doing legislative work, all sorts of stuff for, like, almost 3.5 years. And when I first started doing it, Drew was like, you're not going to get anything. Nothing you're going to do is going to make any difference. This is crazy, you know, whatever you're doing. And then it was like... This Mike Brown was killed, and it's particularly when they released the footage of him in the I don't know. Did you guys see all of that? Where they released the day that they had the press conference, they released footage of him in a convenience store allegedly committing a robbery prior to the shooting.
Oh yeah, I was definitely on top of seeing all the demonization that was happening.
Yeah. Oh yeah, immediate character assassination. So when that happened, Drew like fucking he freaked out. It was like. He snapped, man.
White rage.
Like, for real, it was like, I haven't seen something like that in a long time. It was crazy. He was, like, up all night, like, tweeting furiously and going all fucking crazy. And so I see a lot of that where people, like, wake up and they're like, oh, my God, this has been going on this long. And, like, even, that's still, like, something else will happen. They're like, I can't believe this. Like, yeah. What the fuck do you think we've been talking about for the last 400 years? Just saying. What do you think was going on? We're just like, oh, yeah, it's cool, man. Don't worry about it. Everything's been going great over here. They've just been locking us up and killing us. And, you know, we're the poorest people in the country and, you know, all that stuff. But don't worry about it. It's because we wanted it that way.
Right. It's all by design.
Oh, my goodness. Yes, that's hilarious. So anyway, so, yeah, so that's what's going on. We're kind of in this holding pattern. People had really been thinking that they were going to announce either today or tomorrow because to kind of get it done before the holiday. And they thought that having the holiday looming at the end of the week would kind of slow down any protests from happening. But the grand jury is actually meeting tomorrow, which means that they have not, at least up till this point, rendered a verdict. There was some rumors that they had decided on Friday, which would mean they would have announced today or tomorrow. But now that they're actually convening tomorrow, that means that... a verdict has not been rendered. So,
I know, sorry to interrupt, but I know that, like, the intention of the protesters are to make sure that they are, that there's a voice there saying that the people care about what's happening in this trial. Now, if the verdict does come back, you know, disfavorably for the black community in Ferguson, what, do you think that the reaction is going to be negative? Do you think that there'll be a few fringe cases or edge cases that will act out violently and possibly, you know, take it to the next level?
I think it's always possible because, A, the rage is very justified. So it's, like, hard for me to say that that won't happen. And I know that I even said this. Like, I have internally accepted that that is what the outcome is going to be just to kind of mentally prepare myself to understand it. But it is different than hearing it. You know, it is different than knowing that this man who killed this teenager unarmed in the middle of the day just shot him in the middle of the street and left him there for 4 hours in front of his entire community, has been getting paid his full salary for this last 109 days, and nothing will happen to him. So it's hard to think that that will not have some rage attached to it. But I also know that the activists and protesters in Ferguson, as I said, have been working just tirelessly around the clock to organize themselves. They had a big Ferguson October weekend at the end of October, which was right around our bullshit Columbus Day holiday. And that was a big learning experience. They had a lot of seminars and speakers talking about what it means to protest, what the goals will be beyond this, I've been starting to see a lot of signs there that says this is about more than just today. I'm here for beyond today, which is like the decision is one thing, but this is much larger than that. And this is what I think is interesting is that had the police in St. Louis not reacted the way they did to the original protests in August, mm-hmm. it never would have been this big of a deal. Mm-hmm. It would have been these people are protesting this one case, this one person, this one police department. But their fucking militarized, completely out of line response to people exercising their First Amendment rights is why there's 116 cities that are like, man, fuck this, because this is crazy. It was a military coup. You just stopped having your rights as soon as you crossed into Missouri. It was like, yep, freedom of the press, gone. Freedom to assemble, gone.
Yeah.
It's crazy. So,
Operation, hold back the darkies, right?
Totally. And it was so blatant and obvious. It was like, did they really just thought they could just do that? And it puts me in mind of right before the first stages of the civil rights movement was just like this, where, you know, they would kill three white people in Mississippi for trying to register people to vote. It's like, yep, you can't just do that shit, though. And this is what it seems like to me, the blatancy of it. We're not even going to hide how fucked up this is.
Right.
That they just are okay with doing whatever they want to. And that's what the rage comes from.
Yeah. And that's a symptom of that privileged position, right? Mm-hmm. That's a symptom of saying, like, you know, you're doing something or you've created a system or create rules that don't exactly fit, you know, the everybody. So now when the people who aren't in the majority are saying that these rules are kind of bullshit and that they're not working and you're kind of bending them, it's automatically a position of defense. You know, it's automatically saying like, well, you know, we're doing this because of this reason. It's not really taking the time to listen, which you should be doing if you're in that, you know, powered position.
Absolutely. Yeah. And it's a Democratic state. They have a Democratic governor. They have Democratic senators. This is a Democratic city. So this is the other part of it that I think has been really powerful is that there hasn't been this. If this was Mississippi, if this was Florida, if this was Texas, I think that you'd have a lot of this like rhetoric of, oh, it's the GOP. It's these, conservative, this, that, the other. And it's not. It's the fucking the entire goddamn system. And I see all of this awakening going on, of course, in the black community. But also I see increasingly more and more white people like, whoa, this shit is fucked up. And I, you know, this is a tool that rich people use in this country to pit us all against each other so that they can continue to make money. And the sooner that white people wake up and see that, the better for all of us, because it's really insane.
Right.
It's insanity. So, you know, oh, boy. Speaking of rich people.
Yeah, please.
Get a chance to read that the veterans' letter to the National Guard. They were pleading with them to take mm-hmm. the side of the protesters.
Yep.
What did you think about that?
I thought, doesn't surprise me, our veterans are our most misrepresented class, I would say, in this country. There are more, they make up the majority of the homeless in this country. Veterans do. They are treated incredibly horribly after they get out of our military service. Their mental health is not dealt with at all. I think the statistic is 1.5. I don't know if that's like a weird statistic, but 1.5 veterans commit suicide every day in this country. Mm. So it's an epidemic. And so it doesn't surprise me at all that they would see that the powers that be are not in the favor of the people at all. They know firsthand how disposable we all are.
Right. If you put the National Guard over here, mm-hmm. it's really bad.
Yep.
But if you put it over here, we can keep things balanced and, you know, start talking things out.
Exactly. Wow. So, yeah, I think it's going to be interesting. And then, you know, some things happened the last couple of days in Brooklyn on Friday. A young man was killed by a police officer in Brooklyn, New York. Him and his girlfriend decided to take the stairs downstairs instead of the elevator in their apartment building. And the police were coming in and they opened the door to the staircase and the police officer just shot him in the chest. He died right there. He wasn't doing anything. They just literally were going down the stairs to go out. She had just finished braiding his hair and they were going outside. Mm. And then last night in Cleveland, a 12-year-old boy was in a park. He had an air gun and he was shot by police officers in the park and he died this morning. So it's getting really...
Mm-hmm.
you know, the statistic is every 28 hours, a black person, an unarmed black person is killed by a police officer in this country. And it's disturbing how you can put it by the minute, literally. These two incidents were, I think, 28 hours and like 32 minutes apart from one another. So it's kind of nuts. And so I know in Brooklyn and New York, there's been a lot of protesting going on around this particular killing because, you know, the police came out and they were like, well, it was an accidental shooting. It's a rookie cop, all this stuff, trying to, you know, make some excuses for it. And then, of course, immediately the character assassination begins. We had prior record. They're putting up his mugshot.
Yeah.
They killed him.
Right.
And now he is the one that needs to be defended.
Yeah, he was a criminal anyways, right? So we're kind of doing everybody a favor because he was going to be going to jail later anyways. This is stupid.
It is. It's like a signal. It's like, don't worry, white people. This one deserved to die.
Right,
don't worry
right.
about it.
That's exactly what it is.
It's okay. Yeah. You don't need to worry. Don't look over here. It's nothing to see.
We'll reduce your white guilt by a couple of levels here.
Exactly. So, Bill Cosby, you guys have you guys talked about this on your show yet or not really?
We have on and off.
You have on and off. Yeah, I don't even know what to say about this. The thing that's been getting me is the defenders of him. Like, I find it so weird.
Yeah. And there's also that, there's also the weird, like, well, I'm not going to pass judgment or I'm not going to say anything.
Right.
It's like, well, you know, there's a lot of information out there. You know,
yeah. I mean,
there's a lot of, you know, there's a trail that you can look back on that just looks suspicious and looks suspect. Yeah.
A very suspect. When the same story comes up over and over again, it's like, what are you talking about right now?
Yeah. It's amazing to me, though, that the speed at which the women are coming out with this. I mean, it's almost like the floodgates opened.
It is like that. And I do think that that's often what happens. I actually read a piece by a woman who had been drugged and raped by a prominent banker in her city. I think she was somewhere in the Midwest, like Chicago or Minneapolis, something like that. And she was with a girlfriend of hers. They had met this. She worked at a restaurant. The guy had come in a bunch. He spent a lot of money. They got to be friendly. You know, he was coming in all the time. He's like, oh, come back to my house. We're going to have some drinks. We're having a party, whatever. They go back there. They each had some wine, and the next thing she remembers, she's like hazily waking up. He's on top of her. She's saying no. Then she blacks out again. She wakes up again. She's trying to get up to her phone. Next thing she knows, they're like in a car and they're driving, you know, out of the building. And the two of them start realizing like they don't remember anything, and they're like, "Holy fuck!" She's like, "I don't even have my underwear on." Like it starts dawning on her, and she gets home and she. Her girlfriend had a boyfriend. The boyfriend's like, you guys should tell somebody. She's like, I'm not telling anybody. We're not even 21. We shouldn't have even been drinking. So I had a wine. I shouldn't have been doing that. That's against the law. Now what? I'm going to complain about that. This thing that happened to me. She's like, immediately I went into, I don't want to tell my family. I don't want, this guy's so powerful here. I don't want to do that. So it's been 20 years. And even then this story comes out, these women come out. She said her first thought was, it's a little late, ladies. This it happened to her, and her first knee-jerk reaction was, it's a little late, ladies. And then she started thinking, she's like, wait a second. She said, if one person that this happened to in my old city came out and said that he had done this to them, I would be the first person to be like, yep, it happened to me too. She said, right. I would immediately, as soon as it happened, I would immediately be like, yep, it happened to me too. And she goes, and I guarantee you a bunch more would come out, because that's what happens. It's like, oh, now I have the space to come out. Somebody, they will believe me now. There's other people to listen to me, to hear what I was trying to say that I was afraid to say when it happened. Yeah, so it makes complete sense to me that this is what happens.
Yeah, this person took on the courage that everybody needed to come out as, you know, like as a first step. And everybody should just follow suit.
Absolutely. So I want to play a real quick clip of Dr. Cosby with a AP reporter just to hear his response to the questions about this. Yes.
This is that exchange.
I didn't want to. I have to ask about your name coming up in the news recently regarding this comedian.
No, we don't answer that.
Okay. I just wanted to ask if you wanted to respond at all about whether any of that was true.
There's no response.
Okay. Can I ask you if, with the persona that people know about Bill Cosby, should they believe anything differently about what?
There is no comment about that.
Okay.
And I'll tell you why. Okay. I think you were told. I don't want to compromise your integrity, but...
What a dude, Kay.
Oh, my God.
I don't talk about it.
As the interview wound down, Cosby then continued the conversation. The camera was still running, and Cosby and his wife were wearing lapel microphones.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
I appreciate your time.
Thank you.
She looks drugged.
Something from you?
What's that?
That none of that.
Oh, yeah. She's feeling great.
I can't promise that myself, but you didn't say anything.
I know I didn't say anything, but I'm asking your integrity that since I didn't want to say anything... But I did answer you in terms of I don't want to say anything of what value will it have.
I don't think it will.
Ma'am, what'd you say?
Sorry?
What did you say?
I don't think it has any value either.
Yeah.
And I would appreciate it if it was scuttled.
Scuttled.
I'll tell that to my editors and...
This motherfucker. Oh, man.
Well, I think if you want to consider yourself to be serious, that it will not appear anywhere.
Okay. I appreciate what you've asked.
This guy, poor thing.
And we thought, by the way, because it was AP, that it wouldn't be necessary to go over that question with you.
And we haven't written about this at all in the past 2 months, and... But they want, my bosses want me to.
If you will just tell your boss the reason why we didn't say that up front was because we thought that AP had the integrity.
He said integrity 3 times now.
Ask.
And one other point on that.
This is the manager talking now.
TV writers for the AP in Los Angeles called me up. And asked me, Lynn Elder, and so we're not addressing it. So she said, fine, and she just closed it off.
Okay.
And I think you need to get on the phone with his person immediately.
Immediately, Clove.
Okay, thank you.
He's Dr. Cosby.
Since that AP interview.
You can stop there. Oh, my gosh. Accuse him of sexual. This is just... It's just insane. Look how he's like wielding his power, like even in these interviews. And my thing is this: let's do a little. Like, I'm just gonna do a quick role play with you. Hey, Clove.
What's up, Leslie?
Have you ever drugged and raped any women in your past?
No.
Boom. We're done. That's my whole fucking thing. Like, seriously, when people are innocent, you know what they do? They say they're innocent. I'm not saying guilty people don't claim innocence as well, but if you are innocent, trust me, you fucking say so.
Well, he's taken this weird position of being beyond reproach.
Yes. You know what I
mean? Like, oh, I'm not going to address that because it's beneath me kind of thing. And it's like, well, motherfucker.
You kind of need to, I don't think that's going to work this time.
And can you even see anymore? He's got one pupil that's blown out. He's got another pupil that's like a cataract. How old is this guy?
He's 80, or I think he's maybe 71, something like that.
It looks like his eye is just going to fall out of his head.
I mean, he's old. Don't get me wrong. He's definitely old, but it's like this idea that he can just not respond. And that, to me, that's the most telling thing about the whole situation, just refusal to respond.
Hey, he's Dr. Cosby.
Yeah. What's he got to say about it?
Yeah. He's got a bajillion dollars from the Jell-O Pudding Pops.
Mm-mm-mm. All these years you've been spending yelling at black people to be more respectable. He's out here raping women.
Right?
For real.
Oh, my gosh.
The fucking hypocrisy.
It is terrible, man. And predators like that, they do... That their whole life and their whole, being revolves around their ability to be... their ability to be a better predator.
Mm-hmm.
But he's portraying like a father on television.
Yep.
He's portraying this role of like, you can trust me. He makes speeches about how crazy the youth are today because he's got everybody's best interest in mind.
Yep.
This guy is
he's fucking diabolical.
Yeah. It's dangerous.
It's really crazy. He's like,
God.
Yeah. He's like predator to the max.
Ugh.
It's just really insane. And just more and more of these women coming out. And just to think that obviously there's probably countless others that won't,
mm-hmm.
Because
Because they think it's too late.
They think it's too late because they don't want to get involved in all of this stuff. They don't want to tell their story. But it's just getting to be too much.
Yeah, it's terrible.
And then the one thing that I found kind of gross is, like, there's this detail about this robe, this patchwork robe that he had. That's why I call it Patchwork 8.
Okay.
A bunch of the women have said, like, the only I remember coming to when he was wearing this patchwork robe. Fucking TMZ got a hold of the goddamn a picture of this motherfucker in the robe. Of course, because, you know, they're the Woodward and Bernstein of 2014 TMZ. they are the modicum of journalistic integrity right now and love to be challenged. They love when people are like, find the proof. Bitch, yeah. They will find that goddamn proof.
Yeah. We're working hard.
Harvey's out there.
Challenge us.
Paying people off because they got a lot of money. It's crazy. So yeah, that detail is like so gross because, like, really, who would see you in your robe? Who would really see you in your robe? That's not exactly something everybody would know about.
No. That's the nail in the coffin.
To me, it was like way too specific. Mm-hmm. I was just like, okay. That's kind of the end of it for me. Yeah. I mean, really, it was the end of it the first time somebody said something, because there's no benefit that any woman has by saying that she was raped by anyone.
Mm-hmm.
Only bad things happen to her once that occurs. So it's like the idea that somebody would do this for what?
Yeah.
Especially now, statute of limitations are over. You cannot sue. He can't be brought to trial in criminal or civil court. So what do you think they're going to get?
So because of the statute of limitations, they can't even pursue this. They can't
Nope.
Wow. So he doesn't care. So he is beyond reproach right now.
Literally.
Wow.
Unless they find something sooner.
Wow.
Unless somebody comes forward that's a shorter amount of time. And this came up a decade ago. A woman brought charges here in Philadelphia against him.
How do you sit beside... I don't know, man. I don't know. Like, how do you sit beside him and, like, not want to dig further into this, you know, like a lot of information is coming out. Like, what's going on?
It is. And I know that the prosecutor in the case here in Philadelphia, because he's from Philly, he's a really big presence here. He went to Temple. He gives a lot of money here. We have the Philly Relays every year. He's here every goddamn year doing it. He's here all the time. And they're a big presence in the city.
What does that mean, went to Temple?
Temple University. Sorry, it's a big college here. So that was the school he went to, and he's a big proponent of the school and, you know, a benefactor, et cetera, et cetera, and gives a lot of money to the city, generally speaking, philanthropically. And so does Camille. His wife is a big presence here also. Sure. And they lived here for a number of years. So this woman brought charges against him about 2005, I want to say it was. And the prosecutor said, you know, they didn't file charges, they didn't move forward. And he had very specific language, which was prosecutorial speech for, yeah, he fucking did this, but I can't win this case.
Wow.
Because that's what they have to decide. A prosecutor has to decide, can I win the case? They don't bring cases to lose. They don't, you know, bring things to court that they know they don't have it. If they know they don't have enough evidence to convict, they're not going to go to court. They're just not. That's not how the system works. So his ruling was kind of like when he came out and had a public statement about it, he's like, yeah, I never said he didn't do it.
Mm.
What I said was I could not get a conviction with the evidence that we had in hand. So it's like, you know, this was a decade ago. So even these people saying, like, oh, why are they coming forward now? It's like, no. They didn't just come forward now. First of all, he started paying people off in the 60s. So let's just start there. What are you paying them off for if you didn't do anything? So let's start with that fact, first of all, that these women have been paid off, had been bought apartments, given money, cash, checks. One of these lawyers that from NBC that was paying off, he has, like, money order receipts he kept all these years that came out today.
So there's a history of purchases being made for the victims.
Yes.
Wow.
So it's like, don't come back and be like, oh, why are they coming forward now? It's like, nope, this is pretty clear. You can see when it was happening that he was reacting to allegations against him and has spent this entire time keeping it fucking quiet. And, you know, he's been just like wallowing in the power of that.
Mm-hmm.
They're like, oh, look at all this shit I did. Y'all can't touch me.
That's so gross.
King Kong ain't got nothing on me. That's what he's like. It's fucking crazy. Oh, my gosh.
That is gross.
It's really gross. All right. Let's flip to something a little more light. So I mentioned I joined the Tonello group on Google Plus. Yes. I also joined a group, I think it's like Black Woman, White Man or something like that on Facebook, and another group on Google Plus. This is my first foray into interracial couple community dumb. I had never joined any of those things prior to this.
Me neither. It's all Shirley.
It's all her. Have you gone into any of them? Have you looked into what's going on in there? Have you read any of this stuff? It's very interesting to me.
Yeah, I've browsed a few of them a couple times, and I see there's way too many people that are angry about it, and I just kind of don't want to, you know, keep reading stuff about how, you know, interracial relationships are wrong and blah, blah, blah.
Oh, really? Oh, the ones that I joined, they don't let people like that in. They're all closed groups, so you have to be, like, you know, accepted or whatever. But there's definitely two different kinds. There's, like, the meat market kind, and it's all, like, people trying to hook up. Like, oh, yeah. Look at that fine sister over there. Like,
yeah,
ooh.
Black chicks, yeah.
That's right. I'm into black chicks. Or the black chicks, like, oh, look at this cute white boy or whatever. Which I just am like, this is weird. Like, y'all just in here flirting. Like, what's going on here? Yeah. And then there's other kind where it's like a lot of like, oh, couple people like putting up pictures of themselves with their spouse or significant other or whatever. And then a lot of people like, oh, I wish that was me. Which I find equally weird.
Right.
It's like just like kind of like awkward, like kind of strange, especially because I didn't like me personally. I didn't get into an interracial relationship, that's the part that I find interesting. And you probably didn't either. Just as long as you guys have been together, like I just got into a relationship, happened to be interracial.
Yeah, it wasn't like a cool thing or anything. It wasn't like, you know, hey, I think I'm going to try dating. Wait, no, I'm going to try interracial dating. How that works out.
Let's do that. I'm going to flip the fucking script.
Yeah, that's right. I got, you know, I know some black people. I think black chicks would be into me.
No, exactly. So it's funny to me that you'd be out in the dating world with that as like your primary goal.
Yeah, I'll just put here music preferences, hip hop and R&B.
Hip hop and R&B. That's right. John Legend. He's my favorite.
Macklemore is the shit. And I love Eminem.
I love Eminem. I love him. Love him, love him, love him. Oh, my gosh. Yeah, so it's weird. I don't know. I think dating in general is weird. I don't understand it. It's just like a weird... In modern dating, I don't get it. I don't.
It's too... For me, it feels too... I don't know if this is the right term, but primalistic. You know what I mean? Like, if you really look at it like a zoologist looking at... Like, if you look into a club and you could, like, see what's happening without them seeing you, you would see these, like, really patterned behaviors.
Yes.
It's almost creepy.
It is.
How girls will flirt a certain way to attract attention. And you'll see a guy will come up because he's been...
He's like, ooh.
Yeah.
The shiny thing. I'm going to go.
There's a total, like, side behind it that I get too meta with. You know what I mean? Like,
yes.
I watch these shows. Like, the closest I've come to dating is like watching Nova documentaries about like, hey, the 16 signs of flirting or something like that. Oh, okay.
Let's see what it is. What do you do? Establish physical contact. Okay, like, it's always like these like breakdown. I'm like, really? That's what you do? I thought you just met people, man. What the fuck? It's crazy.
How come in this list of like breakdowns of like, you know, these hitch, you know, checklist, none of them is actually just be honest and cool. Just, you know, just
be yourself. Meet people.
Exactly. Go out there meeting people, you know, and then sure enough, you'll meet somebody who's kind of aligned with your moral layout kind of thing.
Exactly. Yeah. I feel bad for everybody that's single. I just feel bad for every single one of you. God bless you all.
I feel bad for the people who are single and they either devalue themselves or they overvalue whomever they're attracted to, same sex, sex, but they overvalue them and they try and, I guess, compensate in certain ways. Do you know what I mean? To aim for something they feel is a little bit outside of their reach.
Mm.
Meanwhile, there's more than enough, you know, people around everybody every day,
right? That you can meet, and I think it's weird too. There's this idea, I have the same. This came up with the whole street harassment thing, which was this idea that, you know, there's a pursuer and a pursued in the dating realm of things. Because I just don't think that normally happens. Like, usually, at least just from my experience, every person I've been in a relationship with, though, granted, I've been married 13 years and Drew and I have been together like 16 years or whatever, but even I had boyfriends before that. And it was very organic. It wasn't like, oh, you pursue me and then I pursue you. It was like, oh, hey, we talked. It was a good conversation. We continued the conversation. What's going to happen next? It wasn't as calculated as I feel like things are now, and leads into this whole, as you mentioned, the animal planet or whatever it was, Nova. Like, yeah. I picture, like, you know, gazelles and mountain lions, like, where it's like, yeah, separate them from the pack, pounce. Like, it's weird.
Exactly. You got to surround them. You know, yes. The one who's the weakest or the drunkest, whatever. And then you got but there's a guy, I don't know if you've heard of him. His name is Desmond Morris. I don't know if he's alive still or not, but that's exactly what he was. He's a career zoologist that decided to turn his skill set on the human being.
Hmm.
So he's got a whole series called the Human Animal, or the Human Ape or something like that. But it's really, really.
That sounds really interesting.
And it breaks down things like the reason why we hunt in packs, the reason why that, you know, there's been like sexual dimorphism between, you know, the in humans. You know what I mean? And what that, why there's sexual dimorphism. So it's really cool, man.
That's very interesting. I mean, I always say that too. Like, we've only, as far as the, you know, phylogenetically, we haven't been here that long, humans, Homo sapiens. So we haven't developed that much, really, from our inception to today. There hasn't been very much going on. So whatever was going on then, hormonally and such, is still happening in here.
Yeah, and even more recently have we been able to, because we've been so arrogant in terms of, like, you know, claiming the top of the food chain, we've, you know, the education and the studying that we're doing, we've really only pointed that towards us, like, even more recently.
Mm-hmm.
We know even less than, you know.
Than we should.
Yeah, exactly.
Absolutely. Yeah, for sure. And I think there's always been, even before the study that we did, was so focused on mental, and not as much emphasis given to physical reactions and chemical reactions and how uncontrolled responses can be in light of that stimulus, which is crazy because, you know, that's what drug use is all about, period. So that's like, you think we'd have been like, oh, yeah, that's right, man. We take all this shit to alter our state. Of course chemicals matter. Duh.
There's a guy named Sam Harris who he's like a brain surgeon or some kind of, like, he's one of those dudes who maps the brain and stuff. And he basically outlined that the human brain just has the ability to absorb so much data that I lost my train of thought. Hold on. Speaking of drugs. So we're talking about, okay, so I brought up Sam Harris. And you were, what were you saying just before I said Sam Harris?
Oh, I was saying about chemicals in the brain, and you can, that's why we take drugs, and it's like, duh, of course, chemically, that matters.
Yeah, that's the part that tripped me up. Oh, well, I'll remember it later.
All right, that's fine. That's cool. So, oh, yeah, so dating's really weird, and these interracial groups are totally weird, because this idea that interracial dating's different than any other kind of dating is just strange to me. It's just weird.
Well, it's I don't know. I guess that speaks to someone who really sees it as something different. You know?
Right.
He's seeing it as like this exploratory zone, right?
And exploratory, and I almost feel like when you say that there's negativity behind it, I feel like they feel like it's something they have to defend. And so that, I think, is very strange as well. It's like, okay, defend your relationship, but defending interracial dating as a thing, I feel like that's something you celebrate, not defend. It's kind of weird. It's just a strange position to – it's like a flip – on what I would, the tack I would personally take on it. So it's kind of a strange thing. And the flirting's funny to me because white guys are just funny flirting, generally speaking. You guys are not that good at it. So there's that as well.
Definitely I'm terrible at it. I put my foot in my mouth a few times.
Yeah. The G-A-M-E is not strong with your people. It's true. It's very true. So President Obama, not to talk.
Sorry.
Okay, go ahead. Sam Harris, hit me with it.
Sam Harris is because he's doing some research now, because we talked about how your brain controls basically your actions, your thoughts, and with chemicals and things like that. Well, he's now showing that there is like time before the actual thought of, you know, concluding your action.
Mm.
And it's now debating the whole free will aspect of things. Because if your brain is already predetermining what you're going to do or how you're going to react to
things. Did you decide or not?
Exactly.
It's true. It's just like fight or flight is like that. Yes. And there's the whole thing where, like, the first time you burn yourself, mm-hmm. the next time that you touch something hot, your hand moves before your brain thinks that something's hot. It's like the muscle memory is like, oh no, I'm not doing that shit again. Right. So
yeah, and you definitely have to have some type of weird ability to counter that. If you know, left your hand on the stove to be right. able to say, like, I'm not gonna succumb.
I'm gonna burn my hand. It's gonna be awesome.
Well, there's and Sam Harris as well. Like, you got to take him with a little bit of a grain of salt because he does come from like an anti-theist perspective.
Mm.
So when you're, yeah, I guess when you're listening to him, if you're against anti-theist, then yeah, it might be a little weird.
No, but anti-theists can get like that, but they have really good, I think very interesting, points of view, and they bring a lot of good, sound information to the table. Sometimes their analysis of it can be a bit much, but I totally do appreciate the Hitches of the world, if you will.
Right. Sam Harris wrote a letter to a Christian nation, and it's a really short, it's more like a paper than a book, but it just outlines like the reason that we have religion and basically why we don't need it anymore.
Oh, awesome. I'm sure they appreciated that.
Yes.
It's a perfect audience, actually, just exactly who you should be speaking to.
Exactly.
That's my thing about anti-theists that are like really like hardcore with it is that they always want to go to like a Mormon. Like, don't go to a Mormon. Like, just stop. Don't talk to them. Talk to a Methodist. You might have some play with them. Like, let's go for the low-hanging fruit. The people that just show up to church for the coffee and cake. That's who you want to go after. Do not go after people who wear underwear on a regular basis as a tenet of their religion. That's fucking commitment, and you're not going to get them.
Yeah, the fundamentalists are clearly not open for feedback.
Nope. So. They don't need to hear from you. Let's turn our attention to the people that might listen to what the fuck you have to say.
Yes.
It's but
controversy,
funny.
Controversy, baits clicks and sells books. So, yeah.
True that. That's true. That's true. That's true. So, President Barack Obama had his big immigration policy announcement a few days ago.
Mm-hmm.
Which, some people refer to it as sweeping immigration overhaul. Basically, he's allowing people who have children who are American citizens to become a new legal status that would allow them to become citizens. Basically, it's a path to citizenship for people who have children who are already American citizens. And I think actually immediate family. So if your sister or brother, obviously mother, there's a few other connections that you can make.
Being from Canada, I was very impressed with this policy.
Yeah, I don't think it goes as far as it needs to, but I do think it's a good signal. And the fact that he did it by executive order, I think, is good. Drew and I have been talking about Barack and Michelle Obama's lame duck blackness. It's been something we've been talking about for the past, like, since the midterm elections ended, because as soon as it was like, oh, election's over, I'm about to get black in this bitch. Let's do this. Like, all of a sudden, it was like, yeah. You know, he had that whole video with the guy at the polling station.
Right.
Did you see that video?
No.
Oh, my God. It's hilarious. The guy's like, hey, don't talk to my girlfriend. He's like, dude, I don't want to talk to your girlfriend. You're just some fool in here. This is the president. He's like, this fool. His friends are going to be looking at him like, this dumbass. Just coming after a brother for no good reason. And then he's like, here, let me give you a kiss. Give him something to be jealous about. Like, and then sauntered off. I was like, oh, shit. Yeah. This is a whole different Barack Obama. Y'all about to see this next 2 years? It's about to be on. And then Michelle had her whole turn up for what? Vine?
Yep.
Crazy lame duck blackness going on there. So he's continuing the lame duck blackness with these executive orders. And he's just kind of like, I just feel like he's just like going to walk in and be like, God damn, this shit is fucked up.
Yeah. I'm just lifting up like that. You know what I mean? I really like that they like that guy said, you know, hey, don't talk to my girl. And he's like, well, you know what? I'm kind of the president.
I could talk to your girl if I want to. What are you going to do about it? Your friend's going to see this video and you're going to look so stupid.
Yeah. You're not even at your job and I can get you fired.
How about that? You know what? You're going to have 15 minutes of fame because of me, and it will be over.
Yeah, you're welcome.
There you go. Write a book about it. My date with Barack Obama kissing my girlfriend.
Yeah. Obama ruined my life.
Ruined my life. Exactly. So, yeah, I mean, I think it's good. I think it doesn't do as much as it needed to, because the Dreamers, which are children actually under 18 who are enrolled in school currently, they're not legal status here. They are not covered under this. And there's a lot of other things. I mean, he has had the most deportations under his presidency of any president prior to him. And so if somebody was deported and then came back to the country, they don't get covered under this, even if they had been there for, been here for 30 years prior to the deportation. So there's still quite a few gaps to fix with this, but I do think it was a signal to Congress and to the House, just that, you know, you guys had 500 goddamn days to do something and you didn't. And so I got to do this is it. I mean, yeah. The fuck do I got to lose? I'm just going to be collecting appearance fees after this shit is over. So.
Right. And it's weird to have a populace that is hiding and scared.
Mm.
And not because they've done anything illegal, but because they've wanted something better for them and their families. Like, if you've got that population and they're willing to, like, improve the United States by contributing to its economy and things like that, you have to do exactly what Obama said and allow them to step out of the shadows.
And most of them are. And honestly, most of them are. Most of them pay taxes on their directly from their wages. They're not doing it legally. They have maybe somebody else's social security number or somebody else's name, but they are paying taxes into our system. The thing is that those that are in power, they don't want this to happen because they make their money off of these people. They need wages low. They need to be able to take advantage of a lower class of citizen. And so that's why they perpetuated this idea that white men's jobs are being I have not seen a white man picking fruit anywhere or making a bed at a fucking Holiday Inn. Yeah. Like, it's kind of ridiculous.
Yeah.
Or cooking dishwasher at Fridays. Like, get the fuck out of here with that mess.
Yeah.
They're crazy.
And I took a bus trip down to Texas, to Houston, Texas.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Yeah. Did you want to say Houston, Texas, baby? No? Okay. So I took a bus down to Houston, Texas, and it was amazing to me how you could tell, like, because every bus station has, like, I guess the lower paid employees,
mm-hmm.
and the all those employees black.
Yes.
All the way down through the United States, and you could see that their managers white.
Yep.
Like, it was very clear that this was definitely a racially.
Yeah, it's like it's a caste system.
Yeah, it's amazing.
It's insane. And they are trying to hold on for dear life to the status quo. And this is where, to me, it's where their flaw is this grip. Because if they hadn't been so fucking greedy, they could have kept people in the dark a lot longer. But their greed is what is exposing them.
What do you mean?
I mean that when the wealth in this country becomes so concentrated that they don't even leave enough scraps for the people that they need to maintain themselves and to be fooled into thinking that they're actually making it, then you have a setup of revolution, because there's too many of us that are like, yeah, this isn't working. I did everything right. I went to college. I got my house.
Right.
I got married. I had my kids. And now what the fuck is going on here? I just lost all my money. You're still getting fucking richer, and you have left nothing for the rest of us. And so their greed and holding on to the power is what is going to be their downfall.
Yeah.
It's happened before. This is not. This is history. It happened in the 20s. It happened in the 60s. It's happening now. It's nothing new. This is what I don't understand. Like, people don't see it. It's like, well, just open a fucking book.
Yeah.
Just read a little bit.
Right. And the analogy that I use, too, when it comes to, like, big corporations and, like, the decisions that they make, I kind of equate them to this, like, giant boat that really takes a long time to do course correction. And when you do a course correction, you're aimed away from a course that you know makes you money.
Yep.
So any type of slight deviation, the red tape comes out,
yep.
All the politics and all that, you know, making sure that the company keeps staying successful and not entering a higher risk environment. So, and that's kind of like, it's the same thing with countries. You know what I mean? Like, even though that the perception, you can see that it's like, you know, it's definitely keeping a class system separate economically.
Mm-hmm.
But to steer it away from that scares the shit out of the people who are running it.
Completely.
What do we do?
What do we do?
Yeah.
As if the millions they're making is not enough. I always say that. I'm like, it's not enough, man. You don't have enough. At what point will it be enough?
Yeah.
You can't take it with you. Like, fucking A.
Right. Yeah, does it really make sense that you own, like 40% of this country's wealth?
Why?
Like that, like, does it really make sense for you to own that much when you know there are people killing each other just to get money for food?
Yeah.
That doesn't make any sense.
Doesn't make any.
That's why Canada has, I guess, a little bit of a different approach when it comes to how we deal with people. Like, it's never seen like, well, you know what? It's too bad that you can't go to college, but you should blame your parents that they didn't work harder. I mean, like, try telling that to a black kid in the United States. You know what I mean? Who's like,
yeah.
There's zero affirmative action for grandparents.
Yeah.
And they're coming into the system that there's no way that they could have expectation that their parents will be able to work harder for them to go to college.
No.
That doesn't happen in Canada. In Canada, it's like each individual, as soon as you become of age, especially if you need help to continue your education, the systems are there.
It's there.
Yeah. And I remember when I moved out, like I was getting student assistance. I just recently paid off my student loan. And it's amazing how much I realized that my parents were not involved with what I was doing.
Hmm.
And when every corner I turned, when I was registering to college and everything like that, they told me you have to get your parents to sign this. And I was like, well, I haven't lived with my parents for like 2 years. I don't even know where they live. Whatever I would tell them.
Right.
They would work around that. They would be like, okay, well, we'll find out what we need to do. And because the last thing I needed was, you know, my involvement. Yeah, my broke-ass parents.
Right.
Shitty credit to be anywhere near me trying to get a student loan, right?
Right.
So anyways, but the systems were in place to help people who definitely weren't able to, you know what I mean? And you know what? Maybe it's because I was white. I don't know. But it was there for me.
But it was there for you. Yeah. I mean, it's crazy. And just the education system here is completely just ass backwards. And the poorest get the worst teachers. They get the largest classes. They get the fewest resources. And it's like you don't even understand that's so the opposite of the way it needs to be in order to sustain a country to move forward. How many brilliant people are we leaving on the table without providing them with the basics of a good education in this country?
When you educate kids at a young age, like you give them proper education, things drop like teen pregnancy.
Yep.
Like those are like key things that key. Allow a person to continue their educational career. It will drop.
Yep.
I mean, like, have a smarter nation. You'll have a whole generation of people who are willing to make better decisions based on better knowledge.
Absolutely. So, Canada.
Immigration, yes.
Immigration, yes, we're big on immigration. I'm a child of immigrants. I'm actually the first U.S. citizen in my family that was born here in the United States. So this is a very direct topic for me, but it's very interesting because my mom, you know, she came here. I'll put quotes around that the right way. You know, she had all the channels and she was sponsored and she became a citizen. And she had me here, and then my sisters also became citizens, and now we all are. But you know, she has this tack about, you know, well, I don't think it's fair people being here illegally, because she feels like, you know, she knows the hardship that she went through and the hoops she had to jump through and all of the things she had to have in place and money she had to save and everything that went into her becoming coming here from Jamaica. So she and I fight about this all the time. And she's like, I just think if you're illegal, you have to leave the country, because I don't think it's fair people to get into the system and not do it the right way. You know, she has this idea about the right way, which... She's old school. What am I going to do? I can't convince her. She's, you know, 70. What the fuck am I going to tell her? She thinks what she thinks. And she has, you know, she has personal experience to back up what she thinks. So I don't really have much of a leg to stand on in that regard.
Well, she's like a proof that, you know, if you do it by the book, then it can happen. Right?
It can happen. Exactly.
Right. But then again, she has a different experience from somebody who's, you know, going to get killed by their local police force.
Which is what I said to her. I said, you came here for opportunity, not for safety.
Right.
I said, it's a completely different situation. She was living a very, you know, well-to-do life in Jamaica. She wanted more opportunity for her family, for her children. That's why she came here. Not because she thought something was going to happen to her. I mean, she was, you know, she had a maid and a cook and a housekeeper and all of these luxuries when she was living in her country. So it was a very different decision for her, and she had family here that sponsored her, and it was not a flight situation. So yeah, but
And her, like most Americans, I'm sure, they just want to make sure that they feel a sense of security, that, you know, their borders are protected from the elements that are not so favorable.
Right. But the shitty elements are here already. So that's kind of like, and it has nothing to do with immigrants. So
you can't block it. You can give the perception of, like, everything is safe and everybody is not going to commit a crime that crosses the border. But that is false.
No, the biggest criminals are corporations anyway. So the fuck? Who cares? So what? What are you talking about? Some immigrant stealing a piece of gum from somebody? That's not the problem here in this country. Yeah, free gum for everybody, as far as I'm concerned. Let's get to the heart of this shit. These corporations raping and pillaging our people, our economy, our earth for profit only, and none of us get any of it. Those are the criminals here.
Yeah, the guy selling oranges at the underpass. Don't worry about that guy.
Don't worry about him. He's fine.
He's hustling. He's trying to make some money.
He's just trying to sell some goddamn oranges. Leave him alone. Oh, goodness. So Canada, I'm going to skip over the, we were going to talk about this rapper guy, but maybe Drew will talk about it, I don't know, because we're going long. But this is such a great conversation. I hate ending conversations, so.
I'm not worried about going long.
All right, cool. Yeah. So Canada, I don't know if you know about this, but I generally, prior to you and Shirley, have not been a fan of Canadians, generally speaking. Mm-hmm. Because I don't know if I mentioned this to you before, but in my world travels, I've traveled all over the globe. I have found Canadians to do this really irritating thing of, like, when they're here, they like to blend in the United States. But when they're anywhere else, it's like, maple leaves everywhere. I'm Canadian. Don't you think I'm American ever? And it drives me fucking crazy. Because they know everyone hates us and they sound a little like us. And to a foreign ear, you can't really tell. It's like you're English, you're North American, American. So, yeah, that's been my general issue with Canadian speak in my travels.
Right. I think Canadians, when in the U.S., probably don't go as hard in the paint, just because the U.S. goes just as hard in the paint when it comes to being patriotic.
Yes.
So, but
that's true.
I think Canadians abroad, I wish I've experienced more Canadians abroad, but yeah, from what I understand, they can be just as douchey.
They're just so, like, I have been to Canada once or twice, and I've met plenty of Canadians, and, like, famous Canadians that you wouldn't even know were Canadian until they die, and they're like, oh, wait, fuck, Peter Jennings was Canadian? Who knew? Oh, okay. You know, like, where you don't even know they're Canadian. So you guys aren't walking around with, like, maple leaf pins on and, like, you know, representing your country. I mean, you do represent your country in a good way, but I mean, there isn't this,
we blend in really well.
Yeah, you guys blend in well. But what I have found, especially in countries that hate Americans, it's like, I can spot in a minute, look at this fucking motherfucker. He's got a huge Canadian flag lapel pin. Where did he even get that? Did they give him to you when you get off the plane? Oh, where are you going? France? Please take this pin with you. Make sure you wear it at all times so nobody thinks that you're American. Like, that's what it seems like. I'm always out there. I'm like, what the hell? What's going on here? Michael J. Fox does not wear his pin when he's anywhere else.
I heard that there was some Americans putting Canadian maple leaf patches on their backpacks.
I'm sure they were.
Yeah.
Because they see that it works.
Yeah.
Oh, wait. Drew says he's done that.
Nice.
When he's been traveling. Where were you?
There's a kit.
Oh, there's a kit you can get.
A
fake Canada kit you can get as an American traveler, apparently.
You know what? I'm going to make my own Chonilla Canadian travel kit.
Oh, I love it.
Yeah. Yeah.
That would be good. What are you going to put in it? Like cocoa butter, chapstick.
A few like Canadian patches, but the Canadian flags will be like blue, you know, and different colors and stuff like that, just to show how tolerant we are with the manipulation of our national.
Move it around.
Yeah, yeah.
I like it.
I'm going to put some thought into that.
Put it into there. You could get it going. I like it.
Some mints.
Some mints. Some vials of maple syrup. What else? I don't know. Weed. I don't know what else would be in there.
I went when I was down in Texas. My sister asked me if I could pick her something up that you couldn't get in Canada, and I saw a snake bite kit. Oh my god, this is amazing! You know, I get a snake bite kit. I bought it for her. I brought it back, and as I was showing my sister, my dad was like, "Oh yeah, we got rattlesnakes up in the mountains. Like they're mountain rattlesnakes." And I was like, "Come on!" And he's like, "No, we got poisonous snakes in Canada." I didn't believe him, but then I turned over the box.
It said "Made in Canada."
It said "Made in Windsor, Ontario."
Ah! Yes. If you go to Texas, what you have to bring back is anything barbecue. You have to bring back barbecue sauce. You have to bring back barbecue seasonings, dry rubs. That's what you got to get in Texas.
The brisket.
Yes. Mm. They have good. They do the brisket well there.
Yeah, they had to smoke their meat.
Yes, they do. So I have a bunch of stuff here about Canadians and Americans, differences between them.
Okay.
So one of them was chip flavors, which is like potato chips.
Yeah. Yeah.
So I see here you guys have ketchup flavor chips.
We do have ketchup chips.
Intense pickle cornichons. Oh. Is it intense pickle flavor? Doritos?
Cornichon is the French word for pickle.
Oh, I see, because they have to have the French of everything on everything. Got it.
Yes.
And, of course, maple mousse potato chips.
Maple? I have not tried the maple mousse.
Doesn't sound good. Here in America, according to this anyways, we have sour cream and onion. That's a classic, my favorite. Mm-hmm. Chicken and waffles, because, you know, black people apparently like potato chips like everybody else.
Exactly.
And all-nighter cheeseburger Doritos.
All-nighter cheeseburger Doritos.
Yeah, they taste kind of like a Whopper at Burger King, but in a chip.
In cigarette butts.
Yeah, it's like weird. It's like mustard, ketchup, meat. It's a weird chip. And it was one of those ones, I don't know if they do this up there, where they do mystery flavors and then you have to guess what it is. Do they do that in Canada with Doritos?
There's been a few like contests, you know, like
yeah.
Switch one you like better, and then that'll become like the brand.
The new one, yeah. So this was one of those ones where it was like, what is it? And I was like, this shit is a Whopper. And the minute I taste it, I'm like, this is a fucking Whopper in a chip. They're not going to fool my ass with this shit. I know exactly what it is.
That's awesome.
So what we do with our French fries. Now, you guys do like poutine, right? Like you put like gravy and cheese curds, and it's supposed to be really good. I haven't had them, but I've heard good things.
It's delicious.
Mm-hmm. And we just have ketchup. We're very boring with our French fries. Sometimes you'll get like cheese sauce, but that's not normal. Normally, it's just ketchup, and that's it.
Yeah, a good poutine will have the French fries just absolutely saturated with the gravy.
Like you need a fork.
Yeah, I don't know if you've had brown potatoes before.
Yeah,
but it's got to be really
like soaked in. Okay.
And so, like when you got your fork and you're getting ready to take some out of your dish, it's got to be so saturated that the French fries start breaking.
So it's like pieces you're pulling. Yes.
Then you know you've got a good poutine.
Got it. And what is cheese curds, though?
It's just a type of cheese that is the way that it's made. It winds up forming into these like it looks like Play-Doh.
Okay.
Cheese. Yeah. So they're just like maybe the size of like a quarter, but in like a sphere.
Got it.
Yeah.
So it's like little pieces.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Got it.
Like squared chopped chunks. It's like the way that it's made. It's actually made in pieces. Yeah.
Got it. So there's this funny one says how we handle ourselves when we've been drinking. So it has three pictures. For America, we drink, we fight, then we sue.
Yeah.
That's the progression. You guys, you drink, and you drink some more, and you drink again.
Yeah.
It's just drinking.
Yeah.
Straight across the board. Nothing else.
Yeah. And if a fight does, like, if a fight is imminent, you know what I mean? Like, you can feel that vibe at the bar or something.
Yeah.
You'll have more people saying, like, going to both parties saying, like, just let it go, man. Just let the, you know.
Everyone's trying to, like, keep the peace.
Yeah, and I think in America, it's like, no, you should go kick his ass.
No, it is. It's like, get over there and fucking do something right now. He has challenged you.
Yeah, he totally looked at your girl.
Yeah.
Like, do something about that.
Yeah. It's like back to that animalistic thing where it's like, they're all like, you know, rooting in the ground. Like,
what I found weird is that in the U.S., well, I'm not going to say the U.S., but when I was in L.A., when I was in Vegas, anytime I've been to the U.S. in cities where I can drink, it closes early. It's not in Canada, man. It's like at 2-3 o'clock in the morning. The streets are packed with people because that's when all the clubs close.
Right.
U.S. It's like 11 o'clock.
Right.
30.
Not Vegas though.
Well, okay. Everything was open in Vegas.
Right.
But you could see that the
people weren't doing stuff.
Exactly.
Yeah. Especially
we were in the newer Vegas, so that was like a lot more the family.
Got it.
So there was people out at night. But there was definitely police presence at night. But, it felt shut down.
New York does not feel like that. New York is definitely, like, they fucking go hard. And everything. You could bowl at 2 o'clock in the morning. You know, you could do pretty much anything. Like, I never think, like, oh, what can we do? One time we were in the city and my friend Jessica, she's the actress I was talking about, she... always has these crazy places she takes us to. Like, we never know what we were like, yeah, let's go somewhere. She's like, okay, I'll find a place. So we some random place. So we were going to a show. So this was late. I mean, I don't think we were even getting to go to this thing till like 12:30, 1 o'clock or something. She goes, oh, yeah, I've got the perfect place. She gives us some address. We go meet her there. It's a rum punch and tapas bar.
Wow.
So they had like this big menu of rum punches, and you got them for like 2, 3, or 6 or more. And they brought a big bowl, like a punch bowl, to the table with a huge block of ice, some little punch cups, and a ladle. And you just fucking went to town on this rum punch. And they had all these different flavors and everything. And I'm like, who the... What the fuck? First of all, the fact that it exists at all is ridiculous, but that it exists and we could go at 1 a.m. is even more absurd.
Yeah. Me and Shirley, we winded up going like with a couple of friends of ours to this karaoke joint off of St. Catherine Street. For anybody who's going to hear this who's from Montreal is going to know what I'm talking about. It's downstairs. And what they do there is they don't put any clocks inside the whole joint, and they have like little separate rooms that you can go to do your karaoke.
Right.
And but what they'll do is they won't tell you they're closed. So you just keep rocking.
You just keep rocking out.
And they'll keep selling you booze and stuff.
Of course.
They'll bring the booze to the room and stuff. And so you just go until you can't anymore. And we walked out of there, and it was the sun was coming up.
Oh, my gosh.
It was awesome. This is crazy. This is our karaoke spot from
that
now.
That is great.
So you get to that point where they're considered to be closed. They don't bring any new people in.
Oh, I see. So, but once you're in there, it's like it's Disneyland.
You're good. Yeah.
Yeah. They have that thing at Disney World, actually, where like if you stay in the park and you have like your room key, after a certain hour, everyone else is supposed to leave, but you have like an extra 3 hours, so like 3 a.m. from 12 to 3 a.m. to go on all the rides. So they don't kick everybody out of the park, but you can't get on any rides without your key. And Drew and I went, and we were like, well, let's, you know, really take advantage of this. It was awesome. We got through the whole fucking park in like an hour and a half. We went on everything because everybody was like, oh, we're not staying here. Well, you can't come in here then. And we were like, we got our cars. Yeah. So it was awesome. Suck on it. I'm going to the Haunted Castle now. Or whatever it is, Haunted House, whatever it is. Okay, so how often we say sorry?
Yes.
America, almost never. You're not going to get any apologies over here. No. In Canada, it says so often that it's no longer a legal admission of guilt.
Yes. I heard Stephen Colbert, he said that it's the official way to say hello and goodbye.
Oh, I'm sorry.
That's perfect. Yeah.
Oh, that's so funny. I think they have this apology act, I guess. It was assented on May 18th, 2006, and it says in this act, apology means an expression of sympathy or regret, a statement that one is sorry, or any other words or actions indicating contrition or commiseration, whether or not the words or actions admit or imply an admission of fault in connection with the matter to which the words and actions relate. So that is... perfect. It's like I'm just generally sorry. Whatever happened to you, man, I'm fucking sorry. Even if I don't have anything to do with it, I'm just fucking sorry, man.
All that legal mumbo jumbo just to, you know, say it like you mean it.
Say it for real. Better say it. You better say it. Yeah, say it good. Let's see. How we transport milk. Mm. So what do you guys do, bags there?
We do bags. We also do the 4 liter. I guess you'd call it a gallon.
Okay.
Gallons of milk, but we have both the bags and the. I don't know what they're called, but
it's like a carton kind of thing, like paper.
No, it's plastic, but okay. It holds like two of the large cartons.
I see. Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, we only have the carton thing that they do, and then there's like a plastic version of the carton that we have. There's no bags. We don't have bags. Jamaica, they have bags though, so I'm familiar with the bags. Let's see what we call our athletic shoes.
You just reminded me of my, because I don't know if I've told you guys about my stepmom, but she's really gross. Like, she's disgusting.
Oh boy,
she's just a despicable person. And because we would get the bags, and she used to drink out of the bags.
Oh,
it's a teat. Like, it was this,
like right in the mouth. Oh, God.
And she would just be sucked on it. I'd just be like, how do you know that other people need to drink from this? What is your, oh, my God.
You probably have like a vitamin D deficiency because of that. Because you're like, fuck, I can't even drink the goddamn milk now. My bones hurt.
I've got shell shock over here.
She's like, she's affected your actual bone density health with this behavior.
This bitch. Oh, my God.
Just fucking add that to the list of shit you can blame on the hair. Bone density issues.
Ugh. If I were American, I'd sue her for that.
You should. And you know what? You could. You'd win, too. I bet you could get it together.
From the bag. In the
yeah. They'd like, be like, oh, guilty. That's exactly what it would be. Oh, my. Okay, so what we call our athletic shoes.
Mm-hmm.
So we call our sneakers.
Mm-hmm.
You guys say runners, right? Or do you say trainers? What do you guys say?
This came up because we were talking to another podcast called the Lori and Cher Show.
Mm-hmm.
This came up where we were doing this comparison as well, and that came up as well.
The sneakers.
I've always called them sneakers.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah. I've called them kicks, sneakers.
Kicks, yeah.
Adopted a more American.
But you know why? That's because you date black chicks.
Right. There you go.
It's the interracial dating thing. That's what it is.
Right, exactly. Because when you want to enter interracial relationships, you have to have this check.
That's right. Trainers? Nope. Sneakers. Kicks.
Yeah. You can say this? Okay, perfect.
Yeah. Oh, my. Okay, so what we call people we don't like. So we would say asshole.
Mm-hmm.
You guys say hoser? Is that true?
We've said...
What do you guys say?
Hoser is definitely a Canadian-specific term.
Okay.
But you can say, like, you know, I've said, oh, man, you're so stupid. You're, I mean, just as a joke, and you can call somebody a hoser that way. But hoser hasn't been used in Canada.
It's not common.
Since my dad, you know what I mean? Like, since, like, I was a kid. Yeah. Yeah.
Excellent.
But we definitely adopted asshole.
Everybody. I mean, it's, like, the perfect thing. Yes. Fucking asshole is even better. It's my favorite thing.
Yes.
Love it. Okay.
Wow, man.
Yeah.
Don't be such a hoser.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so one of the last ones I have. Okay, what we consider landmarks. So in America, a building that was built 50 years ago, that's a historic landmark to us.
Okay.
And to you guys, it's like mountains and streams and like the beauty of nature. Is that correct? Like that's what you would be like, that's a landmark to Canadians.
That is definitely correct. You can, like our national parks and things like that. They definitely there's a lot of tax money that goes into taking care of that kind of thing. Yeah, and everybody's okay with it. Everybody's like, yes, like you know that this lighthouse here, we definitely need to preserve that. We definitely need to make sure that stays there. Oh, you see this cliff face here? Well, guess what? It's gonna erode in like the next 10 years.
They're scared.
Our big study. So now we gotta brace it and make sure we save it.
Oh, really? It's like they take it to the.
Yeah, it's like, guys, like it's gonna happen. You know, you're gonna, who knows? Maybe something more beautiful is hiding underneath.
Oh, hilarious! So let's see what else. Okay, so I had just a couple things. I said, you know, you're Canadian. F, you're fascinated by minute differences between the U.S. and Canada, and a bit annoyed at Europeans who can't tell them apart.
Yes, that is correct.
That's right. You're vaguely familiar with the charters of rights and freedoms in the Constitution, but have no idea of what it's about.
That is very, very true. And I can guarantee you that people who are born in Canada don't know that this was only signed back in 1982.
Right.
This only came about back in 1982. And I'm actually going to be doing something after I get through the Bible Scriptures 90210 on my show on Tunnel.com. I'm going to be calling a lawyer, like a civil rights lawyer, and getting
Sweet.
Him to
explain it.
Exactly. Like, tell me what I need to do in this situation. Tell me what I need to do in that situation. And I'm going to be breaking it down per sections of the chart.
Awesome. Well, I'll be interested to hear all that because I don't know anything about it. So that's cool.
You need to die, man. And the whole thing about like us understanding now about the time that you would need to present ID to. I'm very clear on the way it works in Canada. And I think just from the context clues I've gotten from some of the videos I've seen in the U.S., I think it's similar in the U.S., but I think it may be a little bit more abused.
It's definitely much more abused, yeah. Because there's this idea, and it doesn't seem to be that way in most other countries, this general idea that the police are above everybody else.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And that you just have to listen to them.
Mm-hmm.
And they don't. The truth is that they work for us,
mm-hmm.
but that has got completely lost in the shuffle of things.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
yeah, you see too many people who are, there's too many, I don't know if the sacrifice is the right term, but there's too many people who are who don't have any business with the police who are getting affected by incompetent policing.
Incompetent policing, and then there's no consequences to the incompetent policing because they're police. Mm-hmm. And then the police are policing themselves. So it's like this giant ball of bullshit. And one of the things that I think is going to be really interesting to come out of Ferguson is this Ferguson Commission that has been put together. It's a mix of governmental agencies. Some of the protesters, there's quite a few young people, millennials that are on the commission itself, and they are tasked with looking at everything that happened and putting out a detailed and decision-based report analyzing everything, where things went wrong, what was done right, how things were. I mean, they already have had court cases where they were arresting protesters because they were standing still. And they said, well, you have to be moving. If you stand still for 5 seconds, we have to arrest you. So they were arresting people on this. The ACLU came in. They took it to court. It was deemed unconstitutional. Unconstitutional. They arrested these people. Not only is it not against the law, it's fucking unconstitutional. Yeah. This is beyond just, oh, yeah, they weren't breaking the law. This is like, yeah, you know that thing that makes us a fucking country? Yeah, it's against that thing.
Yeah, there's way too many Canadians that don't understand the Charter of Rights and Freedoms. I'm one of them. But I'm definitely going to be digging into it.
Awesome. Mm-hmm. It says, you might not even know the words to the national anthem in either language. You like that beer commercial, though. What does that mean?
So the national anthem, definitely, if you're born here and you go to school where they do the national anthem, either language, you're just humming it. Trying to make the sounds.
Is it hard to remember, or is it like complex, or
it's not seen as something that you have to learn.
I see. Got it.
It's more like
it's like a ditty.
It's a courtesy, you know,
right,
to the country that
got it.
You know what I mean? Once in a while, you sing a song that it wrote, but I think it's not as frowned upon to not know it.
Got it.
Yeah. And for the commercial, there's a commercial that this guy just goes into this like 3-minute rant about, like, you know, it's I say a boot, deal with it. You know what I mean? It's a beer commercial that really embraces the Canadian pride.
Love it. That's great. Yeah. Here, I mean, you have to know the national anthem. You'd be like, I mean, for real, you'd be. It's about as un-American as you could ever get to not know it. And, like, not just not know it, but, like, who wrote it, the conditions under which it were wrote, what it actually means, which I think a lot of people don't know the meaning of their national anthem. So it's a big to-do here. Where Francis Scott Key wrote it. He was sitting and watching military battle go on off the shore. So it's about the ramparts and this whole battle that he's watching go on. And so he wrote this song watching this battle take place. And it's, like, this rousing, you know, land of the free, you know, all of that. So,
absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Do you guys have a state that is known to be like the asshole of the United States? Like it's just, it's always oppositional. It's always trying to be like that.
Yes, it's Maine.
Maine?
Yeah, they're always trying to secede.
Okay.
Texas always tries to secede, but they can't. They're too big to secede. They're stupid. They're just Texas. Texas is weird. But no, Maine, they're constantly. I mean, I think every election they have it on the ballot, should we secede or not or something.
Okay.
And they're all libertarians up there, too. They're weird.
Damn libertarians. Ruining it for everybody.
Why? Do you guys have a state that's like that? That's like the weird, the asshole people?
Yeah, we live in the province.
Oh, is that right?
Oh, yeah, yeah. The Quebec province, they want they've called a referendum like every 5 years.
Oh, yeah, yeah. I have heard about that. You guys are always trying to be like, we're going to be our own. You want to be your own country? Is that the idea of it?
Yes. Yeah. Well, Quebec's saying that, you know, we can be our own country. So they've got like, so you got to have to double up the work if you live in Quebec. Like, you got to deal with federal taxes. You got to file those. And you got to deal with the provincial taxes. You got to file those. Whereas like
Saskatchewan, they don't have to do that there?
No, they just kind of all wrap that up into doing their taxes. But here they've implemented systems that would, like, if they did break off, that there's systems in place for.
Oh, so they want to be prepared for the break.
Exactly.
Hilarious. So,
and the systems that they do put together are based on, like, it's all syndicated. It's all, like, unionized. So they won't adopt new technologies because it might cost people jobs. So we're kind of, like, working through this paperwork of archaic, you know, civil service. It's so crazy.
Oh, my.
We have to wait and we have to line up and we have to get, I have to renew my license, my driver's license every year at the cost of almost $90 on my birthday. Yeah.
And that's such a waste of time for people.
That's in Quebec only. The rest of the rest of Canada, you can trade in your check this out. So the rest of Canada, you can go into any province and say, I'm here now, and they will change your driver's license to the province.
Yeah, that's how it is here too.
It's all the same shit.
Yeah, right? It's like, yeah, you had a Illinois license, great, come get your New Jersey one, whatever.
Yeah. I moved from Alberta to Quebec, and they needed a driver's abstract. They needed proof that I had, like, a driving experience. It was insane.
Oh,
the thing is, though, is because Quebec, like, when I said, like, it's not as bad to not know the national anthem. It's because in Quebec, like, if you sing that national anthem, it's
anti-Quebec. Quebec. Right.
You've taken a position that's anti-Quebec.
Oh, that's interesting.
It's either you're with us or against this kind of mentality. Right. But, and there's no room for, like, you know what, how about we just make Quebec not be the most expensive province in all of Canada? Let's start with that, and then we'll talk about
that. Then we'll talk about getting out of here.
Yeah.
That's interesting.
There's provinces that have been in a surplus economically, and that surplus equals exactly the deficit of what's happening in Quebec. So the rest of Canada is paying for the deficit of Quebec.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
And you guys are still making up provinces, because I saw that there was, like, a new province added, like, not that long ago. That was on Jeopardy. I saw that. They do a lot of Canadian trivia on Jeopardy because, you know, Alex is Canadian. Yep. So I saw that. I was like, what the fuck? You're just making up spaces? But then I think – but it wasn't that it wasn't part of Canada before, or it wasn't part of another thing. It was like an Inuit or Native culture place, and then they just named it something. Is that how it works? How did it work? I don't understand.
Well, what's been happening for a long time in Canada, and I know this has been happening for a long time in the U.S. as well, is the treaties that were signed and agreed to by the First Nations population just haven't been they haven't been respected
right
up until now.
Yeah.
So they definitely became a population that was
marginalized and
yes, and they a whole generation has gone through like torture and rape. Mm-hmm. From just like, because I don't know if you've heard of residential schools, but those are the
where they would take the children and keep them away.
Yes. And
yeah.
Them away from their families, and with the goal of making them more white.
Right. So they lose their language, they lose the culture, they lose all of that stuff. This happened. I mean, it happens lamentably all over the globe. Australia as well. I know that happened there too. So we just killed all of the natives here.
Right. Yes, right.
So
that's how we roll. Saying
that's how we roll. You know.
So when Stephen Harper, the Prime Minister of Canada, which would be like equivalent to the President of the United States. Mm-hmm. He gave an apology for the mistreatment of the First Nations populations in Canada, and part of the apology was land negotiation, because that was the thing. Like, we're going to live here together, but that's not what happened.
Right.
We're now taking over everything. The white people are taking over everything, and the native population just has kind of like recede back into, you know, away
corners and
from where white people want to be.
Right.
I think this was the first, being able to divide up that province or that territory into a new territory called Nunavut was a way to say, like, you know what, let's talk about this land thing. Let's make sure that we get this addressed properly, because the native community in Canada definitely has a really loud voice. And we had one of the representatives, Bob Canoe, he came on to our show, and he broke it down for us pretty good on how badly the First Nations got fucked over, like, throughout the... There's a great documentary, if you can find it, called The Eighth Fire. He hosts that documentary, and you'll see what
happens and what's continuing to. So this none of it, which I just think is weird, because in English it sounds like I'm having none of it.
Yeah, no, don't give me none of that.
No, I don't want none of that. So this was a new province, meaning that the Canadian government was going to, you know, take care of the space or be responsible for it, but it's intended to be land that's given to you First Nations, or no? Is that the idea of it?
The idea is to recognize that there's a large portion of land that is still owed to the First Nation.
Got it. And this was a declaration of that.
Yes.
Which makes total sense. And I will say that there's a lot of power in just that apology.
Yes.
It's, to me, one of the things that has been missing from the American culture is this true reckoning with the stain that is slavery in this country. It's never happened.
Yes.
And without that, you can't move on.
Mm-hmm.
You see this in South Africa, where you have truth and reconciliation, because the truth part has to come before the reconciliation can occur. And what we've seen here is this, you know, we don't call it the killing of Native people. We call it manifest destiny. We don't call it slavery. We call it the Industrial Revolution. It's like, no. That's not what happened. Mm-hmm. You know, and this idea of that, oh, slavery is something that happened. No, it's not something that happened. It was something that was engineered, and it was the engine that created this society.
Mm-hmm.
You don't get the boon without free labor.
Yeah, imagine that. Imagine if the U.S., were to take a position and declare, yes, our country was built on the backbone of people that were stolen and people that were just not paid. It was a slave-built nation.
Yes.
And as soon as I think if the U.S. were to take that position, then – because the conversation can't happen if one of the parties doesn't sound like they're open to hear what you have to say.
Nope.
And if they keep defending their position and saying, oh, it's manifest destiny, it's like that's basically saying, I don't want to hear what you have to say.
Correct. And it's like, oh, I'm just going to deny everything that you know to be true. Because it's crazy. And the scary part is people actually believe that. It's like, well, you know, everybody can just work hard. It's like, yeah, that sounds good until you're on the receiving end of 200, 300, 400 years of being a second-class citizen in a country that you helped build. When you see – and I was talking to Drew about this. Well, I really started thinking about this on a more, you know, base level. And I started thinking about, like, why do I believe that Eli Whitney invented the cotton gin? Because somebody told me that he did.
Right.
Who's to say one of his slaves didn't invent it?
Mm-hmm.
And who's to say how many inventions that the slaves could have come up with that their masters then just said, oh, I invented that.
Yeah.
Who knows? You don't know. And there's been no just like even acknowledgement of that. There's a bill that comes into committee every single year in our Congress, and it's literally just to study. This has nothing to do with any actual action. It's literally just to study slavery and quantify the effects of it.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't even get out of committee. They've never even fucking voted on it. 40 years the senator has been putting it forward to try and get even just a vote on the floor, and he can't even get that.
Yeah.
To me, it's like the first step of it. Just acknowledge it, for fuck's sake.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think, too, with a lot more studies that are coming out, like scientifically, when it comes to utilizing mitochondrial DNA to trace back the roots of the generations and stuff like that, you're going to see a large spike of, you know, where it's like you've got this huge generation that was taken from this part of the world.
And now they're over here somehow.
Yeah, exactly. So how can you deny that as not being a country that it was not built on freedom and hard work and built on, you know, the American dream or the American way? It was built off of people that were forced to work. Their lives were at stake.
Absolutely. They had no choice. And it was built, I say this all the time, it's like, oh, I can't believe this is going on here. It's like, nope, we are sowing the poison fruit that was planted with bad seeds from the start of this nation. And, you know, people go on about our founding fathers. Like, no, they were slave owners. They were rapists. That's what they were. Let's keep it real. That's great. This was a great idea. They had some great ideas, and they came together to form this. But even in the inception of this nation, it wasn't just that black people couldn't vote. If you were a woman, you couldn't vote. If you were a white male and didn't own property, you couldn't vote. So really, in the inception of this nation, white, rich men hold the power. Mm-hmm. And you see today, white, rich men hold the power. And so the entire system has been set up to perpetuate that hierarchy.
Mm-hmm.
And it continues. It's like, duh. You made all these systems to keep these specific people in power. And guess fucking what? It did that. Surprise. Exactly. It fucking worked.
Mm-hmm. Now
huzzah. Okay. Now what? It's just crazy to me. Oh, it's just nuts.
You can see the social impacts those decisions back then have made our lives now.
Hello.
Yeah, so can we, you know, draw a line?
Can we say, okay, we got it, ha-ha.
Yeah, so that Eighth Fire documentary is basically the prophecy. It's a First Nations prophecy that says that there will come a time where things will get so bad that you'll have to sit down and talk about it. You'll have to start a conversation with it. And that's what the whole documentary is about. It's to kickstart that conversation.
Kickstart it.
Yeah, and oh my God, there's something here where, like, I think the native population, I think they were compensated by being given like $5 a year or something ridiculous. Like, it was just, and those are the things that he's trying to make the rest of Canada aware of
and know what really happened.
There's a whole group of people here that kind of defined what this country is that are being completely neglected. Yeah.
Wow. Yeah, because I would imagine that a lot of that, when we were just talking about the country's emphasis on natural beauty and nature, I'm sure that comes directly from its first people, and that's where you would get that from. I don't think the French are too big on that. Just saying, not something I've experienced previously.
The French like cheese,
exactly. Or the British, for that matter. They don't seem like big outdoorsy types to me. So you can see that the heart of Canada is certainly in part from the First Nations people, and that they've contributed huge amounts to the Canadian identity, and one would even I would reckon to say even the whole apology thing that we're talking about would lend itself to certainly in some part come from that influence as well.
Yeah, agreed.
Interesting. Okay, why don't we do Bible scripture? Let's do it, man.
God, now we're cooking with grease. Hold on, what's going on here? Why is this not working? All right.
Drew's mad. He says we're going too long. Oh, well.
2 hours?
Well, you know, we're talking, so.
Hey, that's content.
That's right. We got a lot of content.
We got a lot of something.
So we're going to go into, let's see, Exodus chapter 19 and 20. Ooh. And I call this one, Pay No Attention to the Man Behind the Curtain. So 3 months after leaving Egypt.
Oh, wait, where's the music, though? What the hell?
Yeah. Oh, see, that's the thing I couldn't get to start working.
Oh, okay. Yep. We get added in later. Da-na-na-na.
You know what? Watch this.
Uh-oh.
I can do this.
Watch out, guys. He can do it.
Bible scriptures, 90210.
All right, everybody. It's time for Bible scriptures, 90210 on the Interracial John.
Woo!
We're going to get into chapters 19 and 20. And the players tonight are God, Moses and his brother Aaron, the Israelite elders, and I think there's a bunch of other people there too.
Cool.
And this one, like I said, is called Pay No Attention to the Man Behind the Curtain.
Sweet.
All right.
I heard Moses looks like Christian Bale.
What?
You know, they have that movie coming out, Exodus, Gods and Man, or whatever the hell it's called. And it's all white people playing like every character. And then all the black people, you see them like the actors, it's like slave,
yeah.
Servant.
Mm-hmm.
And Christian Bale's playing Moses because
that
makes perfect sense.
Yeah, absolutely. It's white people. Right? White people supporting white people.
Yes.
Yeah. So 3 months after leaving Egypt, the Israelites finally make their make it to the desert of Sinai.
Ooh.
And they set up their camps right in front of the mountain of Sinai. So God tells Moses to climb the mountain so they can have a little chit-chat about what he wants Moses to tell the people. So God is all like, here's what I want you to say. Don't act like you're not impressed by my miracles and shit. This whole planet is mine, but if you do exactly as I say, you guys will be my super-duper favorite holy nation of all times.
Sweet.
So Moses calls all the elders together and gets them all up to speed with what God said. And they were all like, we'll do anything God tells us to do. So Moses goes back up the mountain alone to tell God how the Israelites responded to God's speech.
Sweet.
So once Moses climbed the mountain again, God was all like, okay, so next I'm going to show up in some dense smoke. This way the Israelites will believe I'm talking to you.
Ooh.
That way they will always trust you.
Hmm.
And Moses told God, the elders were on board with the whole thing. They have no doubts. And so then God was all like, perfect. Okay, now spend the next couple of days consecrating everybody. 3 days from now, I'm going to make an appearance. It's formal, so make sure everyone washes their clothes before showing up.
They got to be all dressed up. It's like that's audience right. with the G-O-D.
That's right. Also, put some velvet ropes so that even animals can't go up to the mountain until they hear my horns blasting. If a man or an animal tries to climb the mountain before hearing my horns, everyone else should stone them to death or, you know, shoot them up with arrows.
Damn, these sheep, they're getting fucked, huh?
Yeah. Yeah. It's bad news. Bad news for anything that's going to be sacrificed.
Oh, boy.
So Moses goes back down the mountain and consecrates everybody and tells all the people to prepare for God's appearance on the third day. And for some weird reason, he tells them not to have any sex until God makes his appearance. So God didn't tell him, like, you know, tell him not to have sex.
So Moses just was throwing salt in people's games, cock blocking.
Yeah, he just threw that one in there.
Like, yeah, no sex.
And by the way, so, yeah, so there's no real reason why. He said just because, I guess, Moses thought he knew what was best at the time. So on the third day, a bunch of fire and smoke came down the mountain. And a horn blast that was so loud that it made everybody tremble. Then Moses opened up the velvet rope to let everybody on to the foot of the mountain. And now the Bible says the whole mountain was shaking violently. Wow. And the horns kept getting louder and louder. Then Moses was all like, hey, God, are you there? And God was all like, yeah, man, I'm right here. come on up to the top of the mountain so we can talk. So Moses went back.
But just Moses, though. Everybody else just stays down.
Exactly. And Moses has to, you know, like, oh, got to go up. This is
up again. Oh.
This is such bullshit. Why can't you just talk to me in my head? So Moses went back up the mountain again, and God was all like, make sure everybody understands that if they try to come up here, that they're going to get killed. And Moses was all like, don't sweat it. They know the rules. Everything's cool. So then God was all like, okay, good. Now go back down and bring your brother Aaron back up with you. And remember to tell the people to stay away from my holy mountain. So Moses goes back down the mountain to get Aaron and reminds everybody to stay the fuck off the mountain or it's their asses.
That's it. Your ass is grass.
So everybody's kind of terrified of that. So now Moses and Aaron are at the top of Mount Sinai. And God reminds them all about saving them from slavery back in Egypt and everything. And then God goes into defining all the Ten Commandments. So for the Ten Commandments, no other gods are allowed. You're not allowed to make idols that represent anything in heaven or earth or in the waters. You're not allowed to bow down or worship other gods because God has some serious sharing issues. And God is all about punishing the children for 3, sometimes 4 generations for any father who hates God.
Whoa.
Exactly.
He's vengeful.
Oh, yeah. He's kind of petty. But then God mentions he has love for thousands of generations as long as you only love him and follow his commandments. You're not.
This sounds like some stalker stuff, just saying.
It's an abusive relationship.
It is.
And you're not supposed to misuse God's name. And if you do, God will consider you guilty for misusing it.
No trial. Just you done.
Yeah, you go straight to hell.
Mm.
So, okay, you're supposed to remember to keep the Sabbath day holy. You should only work 6 days out of 7. You're also responsible to make sure that your kids, your manservants, your maidservants, your animals, and any foreigners you have in your camp don't work. Then God was all like, look, I made everything you see in 6 days and took a break on the 7th. Then the Bible says God blessed the Sabbath day to make it holy. You're supposed to honor your mom and dad to make sure you're allowed to live in the land God gave you. You're not allowed to kill anyone.
I think Moses added that one in. He was like, hey, man, just like put a little something in there for the parents.
Make sure the kids don't want to leave so quick.
Make sure we get taken care of up in this.
You're not allowed to be cheating. You're not allowed to steal. You're not allowed to spread rumors about your neighbors. You're not supposed to envy your neighbor's house, his wife, his manservants, his maidservants, his oxen, his donkeys, or anything else your neighbor might have.
I think.
So now with all the fire and the smoke and the horns, the Israelites were completely terrified. And they were all like, hey, Moses, can you speak to God for us? Like, we'll listen to anything you say, because he's kind of scaring the shit out of all of us.
I'll say.
So Moses was like, relax, guys. This is all part of God's plan to make you really scared of him so you don't sin. So there's a silver lining to so aggressive with your
voice. He's like, it's all for you. That's exactly what the abuser would say. This hurts me more than it hurts you.
Yes, I'm doing it for you. So then Moses went back up the mountain to tell God everything was going according to his plan. So then God tells Moses not to make any gods out of silver or gold. He then tells Moses to build an altar out of the earth for all of the sacrificing that God might need the Israelites to do. So he also tells Moses not to make the altar like ornate or anything, because if you use any tools on the stones of the altar, God says it supposedly defiles the altar. He also tells Moses not to build any steps up to the altar to make sure no one can see your junk under your robe. And this is Bible Scriptures, chapter 19 and 20.
Oh, boy. I'm going to sing even though we don't have a plate to pass. Pass the plate.
Absolutely.
Pass the plate. And the plate.
So that's
pass the plate.
Pass the plate.
And the plate. Pass the plate.
Go check out our
plate.
Patreon. That's if you go to chunnel.com and hit the and look for the pledge menu, it'll take you right to our Patreon page. You start pledging.
That's right. Pass the plate and donate. Pass the plate and donate.
Tonight we learned about 10 commandments. The Israelites were really scared of God. Shirley's way better at this than I am. Pass the plate.
Pass the plate. And an eight. Pass the plate. And an eight.
Oh, that's so much fun.
I love the pass the plate song.
Shirley really makes it happen. Like, she can sing. I just kind of like play off of what she does.
She's good. I was just doing my best Shirley impression I could do. So that's what you got there. She's definitely good at that. She always has like, her lyrics like rhyme and everything.
I know.
She's like really good at it.
Just throw something at her and bam, she's got it.
Absolutely. So the last topic we were going to talk about was the kids.
Okay.
So we don't have kids. We are child-free by choice.
You mean living the dream?
Oh. So, yeah, we never wanted kids, like even when we were, like before we got together. Separately, we didn't want to have kids. So obviously when we got together, we're like, yeah, we don't want any kids. We don't want any kids. We don't have any kids. Uh-huh. So... You guys have three kids?
Yes, we do.
That's a lot of kids.
It is.
And how old are they?
My oldest son is 14.
Woo!
My oldest daughter is 7, and my youngest daughter is 6.
Oh, boy. Yeah. That's a lot.
Mm-hmm.
And what do they think about you guys podcasting?
They think it's cool because we have gotten some perks out of the deal. Like, we definitely go out to like different events and things like that. Like, we brought them to the circus and we had like ringside seats and stuff, and that was all covered. And so they enjoy the perks out of it, but you can see more and more. We always have to find a way to balance out the time that we put into Chonella. So every time you hear Shirley say like, oh, hey, and we'll do this, and she keeps promising all these things, all I keep hearing is like, you know, the kids complaining about us not spending time with them. Right. So it's definitely, it plays a toll on us as parents in terms of like making sure that our kids aren't, you know, completely neglected. But we try and keep them up to date and keep them current to what our goals are, so that way they know that we're aiming for something where there's just a lot more freedom that we'll have. Like, I'll be able to, you know, quit my job, stay home. Right. And so we try and outline the benefits, but we know in their heads they're just
sure.
Like,
yeah. I mean, they're just like, yeah, but I wanted to go to the zoo or whatever it might be.
You're still not spending time with me.
Right.
So, yeah.
Yeah.
So you have to balance it.
It's, sure. 14 is tough, too. Oof, middle school, that's like,
Yeah, he's having a time.
That is not... Middle schoolers are the worst because, like, here's the problem with them. They know how to be super mean, but they have no connection to the fact that there's consequences to their meanness. Because, like, when you're in high school, it's like you get that, like, oh, yeah, if I'm a total asshole to this guy, it's going to come back on me. Mm-hmm. But in middle school, that connection's not quite there, and they're just horrible.
It's all about deflection.
It's just like, ugh. I banish my nieces and nephews from me. until they, during middle school. I'm like, don't come around here. No more, no more. Because I can't with the middle school.
Dude has got to go.
Nope. No, no, no. So have they expressed any interest? Like, he could do his own podcast if he wanted to. Does he have any interest in that? Or is that not something that would be...
He wants to do a podcast where he's going to be, like, reviewing games.
Oh, nice.
But the budget we just have right now just doesn't lend to getting him the equipment that he would need for that.
To do that.
That's going to be part of, like, the Kickstarter, not the Kickstarter, but the Patreon pledge system that we've got going on.
Cool. One of
the milestones is going to be, like, launching his own podcast.
Oh, wow. That's awesome. Oh, that'll be so cool for him. Oh, that's neat. So who does the cooking mostly in your household? Do you guys share that, or is that mostly Shirley, or mostly you, or how's it work?
It's not mostly Shirley. It's all Shirley.
It's all her. She just gets it done.
I can cook the shit out of, like, things that a college guy can cook. Like I can cook some really mean Kraft dinner.
Okay.
I can cook some really good eggs. You know,
okay.
It's really, my palate, though, doesn't extend much beyond that.
Gotcha.
Yeah. Shirley takes care of, like, oh, man, she hooks up the rice. She hooks up the chicken. She hooks up I'm not a fan of plantain, but the kids love it. She hooks up all the greens that we eat. Like, she does everything. Does everything.
She does it all. Mm-hmm. And is she, like, is there a staple, like, meals you guys have that she makes? Or is she really creative with it? Or how does she go about it?
She has an unbelievable meat sauce that tastes like if spaghetti was crack, that's what it would taste like.
Oh.
So good. You know when you've eaten something that's so good, your body won't tell you you're full?
Yes, where you're just like, I'm just eating because it tastes so good. I can't stop eating.
Yeah, your brain is saying, do not stop eating this. There's way too much enjoyment in this. And her meat sauce is so, like, she'll bust it out, like, once every 2 months. Just because she needs me to, like, you know, clean up the yard or something.
Just, like, drop it on you. Boom.
I need you to do the yard. What? Here's some meat sauce.
Meat sauce.
There we go.
That's great. Drew, I do most of the cooking. Drew cooks, but he only has, like, maybe three meals he can make. And right. It's great when he does it, but it also means the kitchen will be a complete disaster. So it's like a trade-off for me where I'm like, I don't know. Do I want that? Do I want to not cook now and have to clean later? It's like a trade-off a little bit.
And again, with me, it's like because I can only do the college dishes, the college-approved food or cuisine. But living with roommates, I just got into the habit of, like, when I would cook the Kraft dinner, as soon as I was done putting in the bowl, I would clean out the pots and I'll make sure everything was back to normal. But it's the opposite with me and Shirley. So Shirley will cook. She'll cook the shit out of something. You know, it's like five-course meal and then just mounds of dishes.
And she's like, well, I cooked. You clean.
Right, but that's not usually what happens.
No.
Or something like
so
that.
She's doing them both. Yeah, I'm a definitely clean as I go. Like I'm very big on, like, mise en place, so I, like, portion everything ahead of time. Like, I'm very, like,
yeah.
I'm a big baker, and so a lot of that's chemistry. So I'm really big on just, like, you know, I mean, the night before, I'll measure everything out and have it all covered on a counter and shit. I'm, like, really, like, OCD with it. And so I am always cleaning constantly as I'm going through, like, okay, let me put this. I'm done with this bowl. Let's get that in the dishwasher. Let's move this around. Because my goal is, like, when I go to eat, the only thing that should be left is, like, whatever the food's in and what we're eating on. Like, I don't want any extra shit around. Drew's more of a, I'll use it and just throw it to the side. Even if I could continue using that bowl for the next step, I'm just going to, yeah, I did that. The eggs were in that. So now we can't put breadcrumbs in it or whatever. Yeah. So it's a whole different thing.
The sad part, too, is that Shirley loves to cook. And she doesn't get very much support on the cleanup afterwards in the kitchen. So what winds up happening is now the next day, Shirley will wake up and she'll be like, okay, all right, I'm making breakfast. What do you want? Scrambled eggs? Pancakes? Okay, blam, blam. She'll take orders from the kids. and then she'll go to the kitchen.
And she's like, oh, shit.
All you hear is the pots and pans because now it's cleanup time.
Because now she's got to clean before she can even cook. That's right. It's like the pre to the pre to the pre.
I don't hear any of this. I'm downstairs working on the podcast. I come upstairs. And I'm like, hey, what the fuck, man? I thought you said breakfast was going to be ready. It's almost lunchtime. What's going on?
And she's like, you don't even know. I couldn't even have a fucking pilot here to make some goddamn pancakes for you.
But it comes out more like, oh, okay. Yeah, I get right on that, Cove. Like, spit in it.
Like, I got your pancakes. Let me get this going right here. That's awesome. Oh, hilariousness. Very funny. Well, I think we're here at the end of our spouse swap, our portion anyways. So fun. I know. We'll have to do it again. I was saying we'll have to, like, I'll come to you, Shirley can come here, and then we can do chicks versus dicks one time, and the chicks can be together. You guys can do something. I don't know how that'll go, but we can just keep mixing it up. I'd love that. So, yeah, that's right.
I'm definitely willing to podcast cheat.
Yes.
Yes.
Yes. Let's do it. So, once again, you can find us at interracialjohn.com. That's JAWN. You can also search for us on iTunes or Stitcher. And you can find me on Twitter at Leslie Mack. And you can go to chonella.com/forum, or you can just search Chonella on Facebook. And you can find Clove at Clovisaurus on Twitter and follow him. Although you're not a big, you're not a prolific tweeter.
No, I'm not.
You're very, and you're very like, what's the word? You're like start and stop. Like, you'll be gone, and then you're like, oh, let me reply to everything right now.
Yes.
I'm like, oh, shit, Clove went into Twitter today. Sweet. He just replied to, like, six things I sent him last week or whatever it is. It's funny.
Clove just retweeted something I said, like, 1 year ago. It's irrelevant now. Yeah. I'm a binge...
binge tweeter.
Social interactor, you know what I mean?
Do you go on Facebook at all? Drew has shunned Facebook. He's, like, over it.
I definitely, like, I'm on Facebook a lot. And definitely, like, that's been kind of, like, my go-to in terms of social interaction. Just because, like, we've gotten so much positive response in the group and everything.
Sure.
Which, yeah, people contributing. Well, Charles and Derek were, like, big main contributors to the content that we got going on there. So they're definitely, like, the reason that me and Shirley are mostly up on what's happening on the internet, because then we'll see it in the group and we're like, what? And then we'll like look for it, and it helps feed us with content.
Sure, sure. With stuff.
Cool. But yeah, as far as like Twitter and things like that, you know what? It's kind of like if I'm sitting there and I'm like, yeah, you know, I just posted this show. I'm going to take a break. Let's see what's going on Twitter. Oh, look, I got 15 notifications over the past 3 months. Okay, so now I'm going to go through them, and I'm going to respond. And I've responded to things that are, like, 2 weeks old and, like, with LOL.
Well, it still could be you laughed out loud, so what's wrong with that?
I mean, it's an honest response.
It's fair. I saw it. I laughed out loud. There you go.
Email, you know, timeliness, but, you know, it got there.
Yeah, it's funny. Drew didn't like Twitter until recently. I've been a fan of Twitter. I love the communal interaction in real time, which you don't get as much on Facebook. So I really like that aspect of it. And I got into live tweeting things with other people. And that's like, I love that when I'm watching like a show and we're all like the other, a few weeks ago, Black Girl Nerds, Jamie, she did a live tweet of Pretty in Pink, and everybody had it like on Netflix or on there. And she was just like, okay, everybody hit play. It wasn't even on TV. She just decided we were going to fucking live tweet Pretty in Pink. And it was awesome. We were all going on just like noticing stuff and mentioning things. Fucking John Cryer got tagged, and he was like, oh my God, what's all these black chicks watching Pretty in Pink right now? Because everybody's like, Team Ducky, Ducky forever, Ducky for life. It was awesome. So you get these like really cool interactions, and a lot of the quote famous people interactions I've had on Twitter have been through that kind of real time interaction where I've like, you know, somebody's retweeted me or tweeted me back or whatever it might be, like Shonda Rhimes or whoever it might be. So
we live tweeted a Madea Christmas.
Why though?
I
saw your tweet and I was like, he can't really have been seeing a Madea Christmas. In my head, I was like, no.
If you look at the timeline, I think it lasts maybe like a half hour because we fell asleep.
Yeah, I can imagine. Didn't seem riveting, I could tell you that. So you were thinking maybe you should add Tyler Perry, but then you're like, I don't want to add him.
Yeah, and then I was like, you know what? Like, I don't know. Is he open to my feedback? Probably not. Like, what's the time?
Does he care? I don't know. I feel like I at people when it's positive. I don't at people when I'm not giving, like, they don't need my constructive criticism. When I love something, I'll at them because it's like, who doesn't like to hear good news? I mean, hey, if you got something nice to say to me, at me all fucking day. Do it. I'm all for that. But if you have criticism, just submit a comment. You don't have to fucking at me with that shit. Keep it to yourself. Yeah. I don't need to hear all that.
This movie's terrible.
This movie sucks. He's like, suck it. I made $10 million off of it. How about that?
God, I'm glad that he makes money off of his content, man. But
it's terrible. Why did you watch it, though? Did somebody make you?
It sure was just like, hey, let's live tweet Madea Christmas. Sounds brilliant. And I'm not kidding you. Because the first tweet that I put out there said something like, hey, thanks for letting me know that, you know, Madea used to ride that pole at the strip club. you know, hashtag Madea Christmas, hashtag family movie night. You know, because she, her character is so ratchet. You don't, you, it's like you want to like block your children.
Right. You're like, no, this isn't appropriate for you to see at all. Because she's about to hit people, and that's not what we're supposed to teach you to do.
And it's, I don't know if this is the latest Madea film, but it, from what I was telling Shirley, I was like, didn't Madea have kind of like, didn't she used to have like the wiser, you know, older woman who didn't, you know, and didn't take no shit, and she could get ratchet sometimes?
Right. It was like you had to push her to get ratchet. But then you can see that what happens is, there was this polarization, and it was like, oh, a backlash against the Tyler Perry. And who's left as the audience is like the ratchetest of the ratchet.
Right.
And so they want it ratchet 24 goddamn 7. They want her on the nth level all the time. That's the audience he's playing to now.
Yeah, you couldn't get a scene where Madea wasn't referencing some type of sexual act that she had performed in the past. You couldn't escape a scene that Madea wasn't referencing some kind of violence she induced on someone in the past. It was like the moments of clarity that Madea would bring to an argument was completely – it was like this is not the same woman. This is not the same character. You could see that there was definitely like a push to make her more ratchet. And I was just like, this went from bad to worse.
It did. It went from crap to crap on the bottom of your shoe.
To craptastic.
Craptacular. Absolutely.
Anyways, on that note.
Yes,
we should move forward.
Move forward.
Let that other podcast.
The other people get on to here. Yeah. Okay.
I think it's Jonilla or something like
that. Something, whatever that might be. All right. High five.